This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Kusu Chuang and Noel Lim in studio this morning. And right now, we'll be taking a look at markets in just a little bit. But in the meantime, in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Dr. Noeliana Kamarudin, Senior Lecturer at Asia-Europe Institute University Malaya, on the situation in South Korea as they battle the pandemic and hold elections at the same time. I think this is going to be a very interesting story to cover, especially as it could be a proxy for the US election later this year. But in the meantime, let's talk about markets. Chuang, tell us, paint us a picture. How's the Bloomberg looking this morning?
Well, right now, as at this point in time, only the Japanese and Korean markets are open. The Nikkei 225 is down by just over a shade of 1% in the red, about 19,300 points on the Nikkei. And the Kospi is down by 0.7% to 848 points on the index.
Yeah, and Australia is closed because of Easter, correct?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And so is America on Friday.
So, yeah. So the American numbers are from Thursday, and they were in the green. I think the S&P 500 was up 1.5%, Dow Jones was up 1.2%, and the Nasdaq was up 0.8%. Now, for some thoughts on where global markets are headed, we speak to Stephen Innes, Asia-Pacific Market Strategist at XE Trader. Stephen, thank you for taking the time to speak to us this morning. Now, OPEC Plus has reached a historic deal on output, but will this be enough to stop oil prices from falling further?
Really depends on who you ask. It's one of these tricky issues here because price decomposition is a bit struggling right now. My view here is we're certainly alleviated a massive supply tail risk by the compromise here. Not only does it show alliance within the group again, which is quite good, but it does take quite a number of barrels out of the market when you think about it. And really, if much of this downturn in oil price is really a fact of supply, some guesstimates are suggesting around 50%. Well, then certainly taking 15, possibly as much as 15 million barrels per day out of the equation is quite great. Of course, there is a big issue about how much of the voluntary cuts will come into play, but certainly lower oil prices suggest that shut-ins will happen, and this will, you know, naturally reduce oil prices. I'm rather optimistic the prices are going to turn higher. In fact, I think we could see a significant rally on oil prices, but the big question really remains is the quantified extent to the demand devastation for April. Right now, markets are waffling between 20 million barrels per day and 30 million barrels per day. That's quite a wide differential here. Obviously, if we lean towards the worst case scenario, then oil prices will probably struggle more so than if we err towards the 20 million barrels per day number.
So just give us an indication. You expect prices to turn higher. What's your best guess when can we see a rally in oil prices?
Well, I'm not going to put a percentage on it. I'll tell you why, because it sounds too high. Because every time you put percentages on it, these levels, it sounds so drastic. I'm looking for oil prices to maybe move up around $3 to $4 higher from current levels, just staying below the $30 level in WTI on spot. That certainly gives us a lot of headroom beyond the $20 narrative, and that's good for oil. You know, for the ultimate prices to go higher, and I do see this happening down the road here, because we look at the way that OPEC structured the deal, they've actually surprised by duration. What I mean by that is they've added cuts further down the curve here, and this is actually quite bullish. So when lights start to turn on in China, Europe returns to business, and when eventually the U.S., starts coming out of lockdown. Mind you, we don't know when that is, but it's going to happen. We think oil prices are going to bounce substantially higher at that time.
So $3 to $4 this week, next week, this month?
Next week, it very much depends on how the lockdown scenarios, or I should say the unlockdown scenarios go. The reason behind that is we've seen countries that we thought had it contained, like Singapore, have actually had to extend lockdowns. We've seen Malaysia extend MCO, same way in Thailand up here. We're dragging it out to the end of the month. And who knows, in the U.S., they may continue with more stringent measures well into May if the virus lethality count continues. This is a big stumbling block, and why it makes pricing composition so difficult in this market right now. So, you know, we're optimistic that the worst case scenario has been averted, although their lights have not turned on fully green for oil markets just yet.
Yeah, Stephen, the American Fed's policy response to the COVID-19 has been also quite momentous. I think their balance sheet has swollen to well over $6 trillion. What reactions do you have in terms of the impact this will have on markets everywhere? It's not just the bond markets which they're trying to stop, it's also on currency markets and, of course, equities as well. In fact, when do you think the Fed will come in and even stop downsides to equities?
You know, it's pretty interesting. You know, the Fed buying all narrative is just, what can you say, just ultimately supportive here. And what we generally see is macro investors to a T take a very gloomy view on the global economic outlook, but even they are acknowledging now the unprecedented scale and power. The policy push back in the U.S. and in Europe, we're seeing good policy around the globe, really. So there remains a mostly neutral consensus on equities at the moment. I think, however, we could have a bit of a reality check this week as we're starting to see some other economic data coming into play, which will be more than just the U.S. claims. We're going to be seeing U.S. consumers, retail sales report, industrial production. All these datas should come out quite dreary, and it's really how the market will navigate these potholes will really dictate the pace of play. And let's not forget Friday's big China GDP report. That's the real big data on the card and for regional sentiment.
Well, Stephen, the thing is this. Most developed countries around the world have already hit the conclusion of the race to bottom in terms of zero interest rates. Do you ever see a time when they start to retighten their policy response?
It's pretty interesting. We've been trying to figure that out. And obviously, we think that with the amount of stimulus that's going to provide a significant tailwind to what we do expect to be a reflation trade sometime down the road is going to be quite dramatic. And that alone will force central banks, and especially the Feds, to raise interest rates. Time horizons vary greatly, depending, again, getting back to when the lockdowns happen, and also how willing people are actually willing to come out and release that pent-up spending demand. The problem here is it's very difficult to gauge that without actually having the data to support it. So, you know, deferring to another wide syndrome, we think interest rates are going to remain low for the next year and a half. We'll possibly start to see that reflation trade kick in about 18 to 24 months, and then we'll probably see the Feds nudge interest rates back up. I don't think they're going to nudge them up very far, but they're going to start nudging up to defend against inflationary impacts.
And Stephen, you alluded to the China GDP numbers later this week. So first quarter numbers for the GDP comes out this Friday. What are your expectations here and your near-term assessment of China's economy as it recovers from the pandemic?
You know, it's going to be bad. It's been pretty much written off. I don't think there's going to be any surprises there. The high frequency data points to a very, very dreary outturn. Somewhere, you know, we could see a year-on-year minus 6 to 7% level coming out. I'm just dropping numbers here because I don't think any of us really know. It could come out anywhere between 6 and 8%, depending. You know, we also know that China has a propensity to adjust those numbers, so we don't really know if we're getting the true goods or not. But the good thing here is that China is starting to emerge from lockdown. That's a significant boost. So when local economies like Malaysia, for instance, start to come out of the MCO, there's going to be fairly strong an export area to start shipping commodities to, and that's a good thing. So we hope China coming back online first, all the stimulus packages providing the tailwind, and then when the regional economies start coming out of their self-imposed hibernation, we think that'll be pretty good for the region moving forward into the second half of the year.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us this morning. That was Stephen Innes, Asia Pacific market strategist at AxiTrader, painting a nice little picture over there for the China GDP numbers. And simply put, it's going to be bad. That's what he's expecting. But let's take a look at, move on to other international headlines. More specifically, one of the biggest pieces of news over the weekend, the historic deal between OPEC Plus, which includes Russia and other G20 nations. They've approved one of the largest production cuts ever. cutting global petroleum output by nearly a tenth. This is just for OPEC Plus, and mostly between Russia and Saudi Arabia. This is after a week of marathon bilateral calls and video conferences between ministers and OPEC and the group of 20 nations, the G20. I think we were covering this last week, and it always seemed like there was another twist in the tail. And right now, the OPEC Plus looks to cut 10 million barrels a day, just below the initial proposal of 10 million.
Yeah, so I think they're looking to cut 9.7 million barrels a day, just below the 10 million. So I think the production restraints are set to last for around 2 years and will be tapered over time. But like you say, the situation is quite fluid, and who knows, there'll be another round of renegotiations again.
Yes, and I think there's another 10 million that's going to be supposed to be cut by the other G20 nations. Hopefully all this pans out and there's no and that we get to see a 20% cut in oil supplies, production globally. But I mean, the consensus is that demand has fallen about a third there. Now, we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, we'll be speaking to Dr. Nuriliana Kamarudin, Senior Lecturer at the Asia-Europe Institute at University of Malaya, on the situation in South Korea as they battle the pandemic and hold elections at the same time. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.